So with that, I'm going to introduce you to our speaker, Dr. Hubert Zajac. Did I say it right?
Yep, Zajac.
Zajac. Okay. If you tried to say it like it's spelled, that would be very difficult. he's Hubert. Is the CEO and co-founder of Health Wildcatters, a nationally top-ranked healthcare accelerator and investment fund in Dallas. Health Wildcatters provides mentorship, capital, and guidance to healthcare-related startups. The accelerator raises an angel investor-backed health innovation fund that has invested in 69 healthcare startups from over 25 states. These startups have attracted over $100 million in capital in about 7 years, with a value approaching $500 million. Wouldn't it be nice if one of our group was number 70? Wouldn't that be fantastic? Oh, well, another story. Hubert has extensive experience with startups and is an active speaker, panelist, and thought leader on healthcare startups, entrepreneurship, financing in healthcare. He serves as an advisor, mentor, and board member in various organizations and startup companies. He was managing director of medical technology at NTEC, which is the North Texas Enterprise Center, where he ran what eventually became the Southwest's largest medtech investment conferences, showcasing startups that attracted in excess of $300 million. He was on faculty at UT Southwestern as an NIH-funded principal investigator in the departments of internal medicine and cell biology. He has an MD from the University of Vienna, which means he's an immigrant from Austria, so welcome to the U.S., and he has an MBA from SMU. So, and one thing I want to mention is finally, 10 days ago, it was almost exactly 10 days ago. It was on a Friday. Hubert received the prestigious Dennis K. Stone Award at the 2020 BioNorth Texas IC3 Summit for all of his accomplishments. And I do want to say that I happen to have, do you see it? So.
I can see it.
Okay, so I taped a good portion of it, so I was there. And so with that, I'm going to say, let's get going and let's hear what you have to say, Hubert.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Linda. Thanks for having me. And you didn't have to tape it. Since the one advantage of being on Zoom is that everything is being taped. So we have actually uploaded the whole thing now on our YouTube channel as well.
I did get it, but I wanted to use my camera. That's a little bit easier for me to stick it in front of you.
Yeah, oh, good, so. Good, okay.
Okay, I'm gonna.
Anyway, it was interesting. Yeah, and obviously being virtual or semi-virtual was a whole nother thing this year. But in any case, for those of you who did know Dennis Stone here regionally in North Texas, he was head of the tech transfer efforts at UT Southwestern and later involved in the venture firm Remeditex and starting Reata, the biopharmaceutical company that went public a few years ago. So he was a big presence here and he's much missed. He was also a professor at UT Southwestern and a nephrologist, which is the department I was a part of as well. So came full circle for me and definitely honored to be in his presence or trying to figure this out, attach my name to his or his to mine, I don't know. Anyway, just to be in one sentence with him was plenty. Also his wife happens to be Helen Hobbs, who is a absolute star scientist, member of the National Academy of Sciences. So, just a power duo until he passed away. Any case, Linda, thank you for having me. Thanks everyone for being here. I'm told I've got about 45 minutes. I would love to have more of a conversation, but I think it might make sense. Some of this stuff is maybe a little easier told in pictures. And so I'll walk us through a PowerPoint presentation, and then create reference points for everyone, and so we can have more of a conversation thereafter. This actually is a not completely random picture. I really love it because it's so colorful. But if you were to you see where it says healthcare startup innovation and funding, if you follow the Dean funding up to the top of the building right behind it with the golden reflections, and then go all the way to the left upper corner of that building, that's exactly where I am this moment. So this top floor of this building is the Health Walk Headers floor. So we have 17,000 square feet here in downtown Dallas. And what you're seeing in front of us is part of the farmer's market that happens to be right in the middle of Dallas. In any case, thank you for having me. And geography has become superfluous, and you'll hear that in several references that I will make throughout the talk because of also how we had to pivot throughout the year. We are at 77 startups now that we have invested in or that we have accelerated. And like Linda said, we lean on, those have gone on to raise over $100 million. We also lean on over 170 or probably north of 200 mentors, many of which are mentor investors as well. And they create the backbone of our operation. The hometowns I have not updated here, but we are well in excess of 30. But 28 states and 3 countries is where our startups come from. And that is a very relative term because when a startup comes from somewhere, in many cases, it's literally just so happens to be the hometown of the CEO. So when we put a push pin into our imaginary map, we put it wherever the CEO happens to live, which in the case of one of our startups, for instance, is Denver, because that's where the CEO lives. He spent all his adult life in California, and he really is from New Zealand. And so it is with our Boston startup. The entrepreneur lives in Boston, but he and his buddy are actually Canadians from Vancouver, and both of them grew up in South Korea, the Koreans. So these things are very fluid these days, and certainly I've become ever more so this year. So like I said a second ago, the backbone of our operation are the many mentors, many of which are also investors in our funds. I'm not gonna speak about the funds much in this conversation here, but just to give you an idea, my partners and I are all angel investors in healthcare and have been for many years. And you should see this list as other people that have co-invested with us over those years. So I've raised 8 $1 million super early stage venture funds to invest in these 77 startups. And so these are very small amounts of money, very small funds. Nevertheless, early on, a little bit of help and a little bit of money can truly make the difference. And so that's been, of course, the thing we're most proud of. But some of these people that you see on this slide are not investors. They're really just curious about health innovation, or they're wanting to contribute and help further health innovation. And so it's an incredible honor to be able to work with so many well-meaning people. Another piece of our operation that's sometimes a little bit hard to explain is that we are a for-profit entity. We're not designed to earn a profit. So we're really running the fund, defraying expenses, and investing the rest of the money every year. But we also have the support of a variety of sponsors. And so in Dallas, we get to play a pretty special role, and really it is justified by the involvement of our sponsors. So those are entities that give us money and or also free services. And with that money, we get to do the things we are in most cases known for in our region and beyond. And those are the hackathons, the investment conferences, the educational seminars, the speaking opportunities we put out for others. Anything you see that we do in the community, running the Dallas Startup Week healthcare track or co-organizing conferences with SBIR, you name it. And we're involved in a ton of stuff. Obviously, a lot of it in North Texas, but a lot of it also touches the rest of Texas or the nation and beyond. Like you heard me say earlier, most of our startups are not necessarily from Texas. About a third are from Texas. And then even a smaller portion of that is from Dallas. So we're attracting startups from all corners of the world. It's, as we all know, cut your arm, the same red blood comes out of all of us, no matter where we're from, no matter where we grew up, no matter who we are. So medicine has this wonderful unifier that I know I share with all of you as you have a passion in health innovation and reducing suffering and pain in the world. So anyway, these organizations are each substantially helping us to do what of course I love to do, and that is to be involved in our community and make it a better place for all of us. I want to show a couple of highlights that maybe illustrates that point that I was just making there around the type of things. So this is highlights for us. We had an IPO of one of our portfolio companies called Lantern Pharma. It's another one of those stories. I mean, where's the Dallas piece? Well, the Dallas piece in this case actually happens to be, they are Dallas based, but the entrepreneur is Indian, found the IP in California, came to Dallas because of Secret, didn't get Secret money. Anyway, long story short, a lot of the research happens in New York. It's just all over the place. But we happen to have met him at the right time when he needed help. His Secret had just fallen through and he didn't quite know what to do and where to go. Now, fast forward to this year, the CEO that now leads that organization is a different person. As you see so very often, the startup entrepreneur is not the same person that will grow the company and or bring it public. That's a different skill set. The middle slide here, and I think the next slide has it too. So the middle slide and then the next slide, the one on the left, really just highlights our hackathon series of events that we have initiated last year, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously it came to a screeching halt in February. Actually on the next slide here on the left, you can see the logo of the Women in Science and Health Hackathon, which was the third hackathon we ran in February of this year. It was really at the very tail end of ability to do that. Luckily, I've heard of none that got infected late February through our event when it was starting to be more and more clear that the US is going to be affected in a major way as well. So hackathons have become a really cool instrument to get startup entrepreneurs involved, get them energized, and also equip them with some of the initial help and connections that they might need. So almost like an accelerator, super light version. In the middle here, you see a logo called HHCN, which stands for Health Hacking Crisis Network. That was an organization, a nonprofit I started in the spring. It really just, the only desire I had was to connect people in my network to each other to create basically a rapid reaction force that can solve any incoming healthcare problems we might be facing that weren't going to be addressed nationally. In other words, I was on vacation on the Gulf Shore and the shutdown happened. To me, it was a bit different in this case because I felt like there's a responsibility as someone who's well-connected to call others and say, hey, let's huddle, let's put our heads together, where are the needs? And out of that effort, it was not designed to create things so much as more as to bring the right people into the room, facilitate the formation of various interest groups that have shared goals, let's say masks or gowns or face shields or PPE or ventilators, you name it, support whoever wants to tackle that kind of as a grassroots type of event and give them logistics, money, whatever they need. And so we were able to have some really cool things happen, including we got, I'm not a sewer, but some absolutely absurd amount of material donated for the cloth mask effort. It was like, hundreds of thousands of masks worth of material. And then Medventures was our investment conference that I restarted. I led that effort years ago at Linda, like Linda said, at North Texas Enterprise Center. It fell dormant. By the way, North Texas Enterprise Center is also not around anymore. That building was purchased by a local university. But nevertheless, there's a little bit of a gap in the healthcare investment space for us. And so revived the MedVentures Conference, which has a pitch competition and a showcase. And of course, we had to do this all online. So in May, we pivoted in March to keep it open. And instead of canceling it, bring it online, which at the time was one of the first conferences not to be canceled, but rather to just shift it online and give access for free to everyone. So we were proud of having pulled that off. It was 40 people, 40 different speakers that had to be coordinated in a matter of over the course of several hours conference. And it worked really well and was one of the first of its kind that was fully virtual. Instead of having to cancel and disappoint everyone. A little bit about our process. It's not rocket science. I can't claim that. We basically get a lot of applications every year. Like Linda said, we're fortunate to have had some good results with our startups. Needless to say, I would say our mentors play a great role in that, helping them. Because of that, we get a tremendous amount of applications every year. We screen them throughout the late spring and early summer. And then right when you see quick pitches live, of course, this year that happened on Zoom. And then on Labor Day, we started our cohort of 2020, which contained 9 startups. This is a little bit of an overview of what happens, even though this is really an example of a healthcare technology company, as in healthcare software company. So at the early time frame, we really look at the business model real hard. And then we say product development and first alpha testing and beta testing. The truth is, in many cases, the startups had already done that, and they're really refining it. We're starting up pilots for them. We have relationships with a variety of hospitals, that large hospital systems that we have exclusive pitch sessions for. So the teams pitched a Henry Ford system in Detroit, Texas Health Resources here in Dallas, and we're continuing to set such pitch opportunities up for them. We're also privately pitching other systems that have an interest in innovation and want to be involved in that. And so then, of course, we fast forward after the program is done into mid-May when we had our pitch day, which happened last week. And then we continue to help them fundraise or whatever else they need, and then start up again this spring, the cycle. Funding-wise, we're in a obviously pre-seed seed space with our investments. The type of investors that are likely going to invest are angel investors, angel groups, family offices that early following us, or investing in our fund, which is composed of over 120 accredited investors, which, by the way, I think that, I've run an angel group as well prior. It was a nonprofit, but I think there are not many angel groups that have 120 or more verified angel investors. When I say verified, I mean, I personally endorse the checks. I know they're real. And when you start looking out for healthcare investors, especially early stage, it's very, very difficult to find them. And so in this case, I think we're looking at one of the largest verified angel groups of specifically healthcare investors, which I'm eager to continue to build because I think it's an essential element of our ecosystem here in Texas. And obviously a lot of our teams also will have applied for NIH funding or applying for NIH funding, usually through SBIRs. In many cases, they are the product of an I-Corps program, which is now that it's more popular and better known, is a funding choice early on that is often helping the companies flesh out the ideas. So I have, and let me check on my time, I think we're still good. So I have some examples, and I think the companies can just, instead of speaking abstractly about them, I can just give you some flavors, and then we can pivot into into questions. As an ambassador of these companies, there's absolutely no doubt that I will continue to talk about them until I'm cut off, until the mic is cut. So don't ever worry about me not speaking longer on their behalf. But I think it would be maybe helpful to have kind of an idea of what they all are. This is a snapshot of all of the companies that have gone through the program over the now 8 sessions. And this gives you a little bit of a snapshot. The typical, you know, average raise is $1 million. The median is 500K. So I think that's a little bit more typical for an early stage company. Of course, this is very, very rudimentary type of information because it's going to be different for a pharma and a medical device or diagnostic and a healthcare IT company. The cohorts, depending on vintage, how old they are, have raised, you know, anywhere between a couple $1 million to over $30 million. And like Linda said, the combined valuation are approaching $500 million already. So here are some examples of startups. Care Starters, actually Austin-based, for instance. In our early days, I will say that too. In our early days, you will find many more Dallas and Texas-based companies because our reach was obviously not that deep yet. And Care Starter is an Austin-based company that brings resources. Oops, this isn't my bad. Apologies. Brings resources to military personnel. Think of a child with autism. It's not enough to get him or her just diagnosed. You really need to find all the different other resources, from speech therapy to, you name it, for them. And so this puts that at the fingertips of a parent. Socrates is a medical device company developing a non-invasive glucometer. It's Dallas-based. CareLoop is a tech-enabled services company that allows you as the caregiver of a person that's just has to be moved to a long-term care facility or to an assisted living facility, allows you to have the kind of guided help that you would need to make the best choice for your family. So it's kind of I think that's a benefit that a company can add to their list of benefits. Lantern, I mentioned already, is a pharma AI company that had now has the LTRN ticker symbol and has a hybrid background of where they're from. Pure Wine is our most fun one because the wine is as in wine. So we had to stretch our healthcare approach there a little bit. Had a lot of fun with that one. But basically, first things first, the person that brought it to us was a tried and true, absolutely superb PhD scientist that we knew and that had brought another startup to us. We trust him. He's superb. When he brought the startup to us, we of course weren't sure, we're scratching our heads, what do we do with it? But basically what it is think of it as a tea bag on a wand, and actually the device is called wand. It filters histamines and sulfites out of wine. So a lot of people generally believed that people who have headaches from wine, and that's about a third of the population. If you drank the whole bottle, I can't help you. But if you get a headache from one glass of wine, then you shouldn't. And so this device, you just put the tea bag in there, and it filters the sulfites and histamines out, and people can enjoy a glass of wine in a social context, or they have also devices that they can put on a bottle. So we just simply went with the age-old advice of one glass of wine is good for you, and so slip that in under healthcare. Silicon Arts is actually Memphis-based. This is think of it as a 3D makeup to help people that have disfiguring scars that are indentations in the skin, so you can easily camouflage those. It's not a permanent solution, but it can help people that have something that they would like to hide on special occasions. DualArms is a device company helping people that are being vocal cord inspections or inspections of the airways to not have the gagging reflex when they're being anesthetized in the vocal cords of being anesthetized. So the site of biopsy has been anesthetized because the anesthetic is being nebulized at the location. And so this helps that there isn't any drip on your vocal cords, which usually causes you to gag. And a lot of procedures are stopped or halted because of that, especially in children or people who can't comply. Non-Invasics is Houston-based, got some money also from TMC Venture Fund. This is really in the pediatric space, measuring blood oxygenation in newborns. And Mountain is think of it as a subscription service for people who don't have a traditional insurance plan, but rather a high deductible plan. So it covers kind of the basic things that you know you're going to need. You might need your annual visit, you might need your flu shot, you might need birth control. So covers basically with a simple low monthly fee, all the basics that are just really more good health decisions or important things you should be doing every year. And also covers some minor emergencies, like caps the cost on a variety of things. So it's a good option for some people who can't afford the expensive healthcare plans, but are going rather with a high deductible plan. I'll go on here. Connected Health is in the behavioral space, helping municipalities manage their clients and able to prioritize who they should be calling today based on software loaded on the cell phones of the respective clients, obviously with their consent. Optonomy is in the space of helping home health agencies software. So it helps you to set up a whole home health agency, all the tools you need to run a home health agency. And this is an exploding field, of course, home health. Medibooker is, think of it as a cast light. It's helping people compare pricing of better pricing for the same services. Now we're going back into more diagnostics and devices. Atea is on helping you communicate if you have to wear a mask. So if you're on CPAP and you often feel excluded from everyone else, you can't speak. You can hear others, but you can't speak. So just a microphone solution for and speaker solution for people who have to wear these masks, and they really feel claustrophobic in there often and cut off. Gregor is a prostate cancer diagnostic company. Teas in Georgia and Gregor's in Minneapolis. And Venostent, I think currently is in Houston. So some of them, I need to check in on them, where they are. I know they're around, they're doing well, but not necessarily where the entrepreneurs live right now. So Venostent deals with the problem of having in dialysis access sites that often tear up. So many of you know, people on dialysis have a shunt in their elbow, and they unfortunately have a lot of problems, these shunts, because there's a connection between a vein and an artery, and they often break, and then another one has to be created. First of all, you have only a limited amount of those sites, 4 in general. And secondly, they're very painful, they're very expensive to maintain, and so this solution reinforces the connection. Surgery of connecting an artery to a vein. A couple more. Stingray is a therapeutics company in the cancer space. Vasonosis is a software company that models the flow in brain aneurysms. It helps you pick the right kind of stent that you might want to place. And SpareMe is a company that helps with fertility issues for guys. And then I got a couple more slides just of the logos of the companies that were in this year and last year's program. I want to just end on this slide here. Like I said, 8 of the 9 companies are not in Dallas, which meant one of them was here. If you do the math right. 8 plus 1. So one was in Dallas. I know this is a very chance. Now, of course, it turned out that if the guy shows up here at my office, he's actually the one that's at a disadvantage because we can't both be on Zoom and both be talking. We'll have feedback issues, even if he's on his earphones. So it turns out in the end, he ended up going into one of our offices and not sit right with me at my desk. So in the end, we were all on Zoom in remote location. So there wasn't really much of a strategic advantage to being here. But what I'm trying to illustrate here is less so the various technologies, even though I'm happy to speak about those as well, but more so about the composition of this group, because usually what happens, they come from all over and then they spend 3 months with us here in Dallas. Of course, this year they came from all over and the only time we spent together was on Zoom, which meant I could travel, and it also meant that we had to deal with their time zones because they were in 6 different time zones, from in Israel, continental Europe, Eastern, Central, Mountain, and Western or Pacific time. So we had to work simultaneously with these group and come up with the right times to do all of our communal events where we all do things together and the lectures to help them coordinate. And obviously also had to do that for them, hundreds and hundreds of mentor meetings that we coordinated for them to make sure everyone is aware. Obviously the entrepreneurs had that down pretty quick, but obviously our mentors, not necessarily so. So luckily this gotten a little bit easier, but that was one of the main sources of main changes for us, that we had to accommodate so many different locales, including, is the sun rising there right now? So the light is bad and pitch day falls into the evening here, but it's morning anyway, you can only imagine. So strange things that we never had to consider were more major topics here, as well as attire, which usually is for pitch day a topic. It's not much of a topic if you're sitting in front of a computer. So I'm gonna stop here. Is also my contact information, and I can either go back and forth on the slides and expand or answer any other questions you might have.
Why, we will send this information. Hubert, why don't you open up the floor so that you can see people, and let's go to questions. I know that one person has said that they had a question. So Robert, why don't you ask your question?
Hubert, it was a good presentation. I enjoyed seeing all the names of your startup companies and noted that you showed how much money they raised, or in some cases, how much revenue. But unless I missed it, I didn't catch anybody who had a profit. How many of all of those companies are profitable?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd literally have to go one by one. A minority, of course. Needless to say, when we're talking about medical device or pharma companies, I wouldn't expect them to be. If they're older, like a Pure Wine, for instance, that company is profitable. But generally what happens when they are successful early on and they're making money, they're not gonna be profitable because they use all the money that they make to reinvest in growing. So on the device side and the pharma side, I'm pretty sure there are none that are profitable yet. On the health IT side or on the medical or on the product side, some are or could be if they want to be, but they are likely choosing to invest their money into additional growth. So some, but a minority.
Well, I'd like to ask a question. How long do you stay with these companies? You get them on startup, you take them through that. Are you going to stay involved with them for the course?
Yeah, I mean, so the program on paper is 3 months and it's just come to an end. I keep in communication with all of them as long as they want to. There are several scenarios that happen. Obviously, there is a number that will fail regardless of what we do. Circumstances, personal circumstances, economy, you name it, all sorts of things can happen. Obviously, that's also a minority of companies, but still that does happen. And then amongst the ones that are willing to communicate, we're book a meeting with me or any of our mentors for as long as you want to. So we never leave. And as a matter of fact, I'm in contact with companies from year one. Now, here's the thing, you know, when we're talking about the type of advice I can give, obviously, it's going to be more pertaining to early stage fundraise and things you need early on. So as they grow up, for instance, the company that's gone through an IPO, I did not know the entrepreneur. He did not, the new CEO, he did not go through the program personally. Interestingly enough, he's become very actively involved here also as a mentor, even though he did not go through the program. And he's just as nice as he could be. So I'm having actually quite a bit of conversations with him. But I think in such a scenario, you would not necessarily predict that, because I wouldn't be your best investment bank advisor or your best, how do you pull off an IPO advisor? That's not me. That's not where I shine. So I think naturally over time, you will see them gravitating towards other people. But there's still some things we can do. We obviously invested in them early on. We're on their cap tables. And there's still some purpose-driven things we can do even for the more grown-up startups.
Okay. Yeah.
But the formal program, just to be clear, the formal program ends after 3 months, and then we have additional sessions for them throughout the next few months. But they are more of social and staying in touch and keeping the group together nature rather than formal lectures.
Okay, when they get to a certain point, do you have references as to where they should go from there when it gets beyond your area of expertise?
Yeah, I mean, our mentors are from a variety of backgrounds, including investment banking. And we also have something we call the Health Investor Alliance of over 50 venture funds that invest in early stage healthcare. Most of them will not invest at this early stage, but a lot of them are interested to get to know our startups at this early stage with an eye towards a potential investment in the future. And so they get to make those connections early on or as appropriate. So yeah, we absolutely generally have people that can help them. We've got people that can help them with an exit if they need to go into an auction or sell or want to. So all sorts of relationships that could be brought to bear, whether it's directly through us or through one of our mentor investors that has experience in that field. The bullseye of our mentor investors is a successful healthcare entrepreneur, by the way. They've made their money, they've been successful, they've been through this, and they're kind of, there isn't an alumni club for them, right? I mean, if they go speak at their alma mater, most people will not understand healthcare entrepreneurship. It's not like they can just very often the name is unknown, the company nobody's ever heard of. So, but they are, stars in our circles. They are very much the stars in our circles. So they feel like this is a home for them, because this is where they will meet, let's say, 10 outstanding startups every year. The advice they give is point on for them. Whether the startup fits that or not doesn't matter. It just matters that one of them is going to be interested in what they have to say, and it's relevant. And so they might be able to be involved in the success of some of these early stage startups. And in many cases, they're just saying, I didn't have those type of resources when I got started, but I'd love to be part of it now that I can give back. And so this is what excites a lot of them. Putting what I call a poker chip into the game is another bonus, right? So you invest in the funds, and then you're technically invested in each of the startups. For a lot of them, that's fun. Obviously, it's not going to be life-changing, even if it's a very significant event. They'll make a few X on the money, but not it won't change their lifestyle.
Ron, did I see you kind of raise your hand?
Yes, I did, Hubert. Thank you very much for what you're doing. I'm very committed to building a life sciences ecosystem, especially in Houston and the medical center here. And obviously Dallas is another important center of gravity. So I can't thank you enough for what you're doing to help people sort of get to first base. You know, it's really, there's so much untapped. I came out of the New York and Boston communities and had been involved in dozens of biotechnology companies, et cetera. You know, it is so easy to, the ecosystem there is so mature, all the components are there. And so to what's really needed here are people like you who are willing to commit time and effort and, you know, helping the uninitiated get to that very, very first step. I think Linda's point about that next step, you know, once you've gotten to a little bit of momentum and you've gotten, you know, your act together, so to speak, of really connecting efficiently with the right capital, because it's not just the money, it's really the capability, the knowledge, to really build the true company at that point is really critical. Just, you know, for your information, I got a group of a half a dozen pretty august people together to create a fund that'll be like the Bridge Bio Fund. Bridge Bio, which, you know, is peripherally involved in 5.5 years ago, is now over $5 billion market cap. And essentially what it does is it funds individual projects. And by funding multiple projects and having multiple shots on goal, the investors are de-risked because it's not just a single company. Most companies will fail in this space, as we all know. That big list that you had, I would venture to guess that maybe, you know, a couple will achieve true, you know, prominence and become a fully integrated company, but it's hard. And so, so it's important to have these multiple shots on goal. So what we've created is a highly efficient system where highly seasoned C-level individuals could allocate their time across a portfolio of many, many projects, deploy capital efficiently, and enable those individual companies, they're individual with their own boards, their own C-Corp, but it allows them to really gain access to capital, talent, so on and so forth. So there could be opportunities for coordination. So I'm actually looking for folks like your organizations that are at the very front end that could kind of whittle down, you know, opportunities. And then that next handoff, Linda, to Linda's point, is really important. That's the space that we operate in. And then when you get the clinical proof of concept, then it's a whole nother ball of wax where you're thinking going to the public markets and so on. So I think that, you know, we need as much coordination as possible for us to be able to make it here in Texas. We have a lot of things working against us because we're just not a mature ecosystem. But if there's more coordination, we can really do a lot of good. So I just want to thank you for what you're doing.
Well, it sounds you. Like yeah. There's more opportunity to talk between the two of you, certainly.
Absolutely.
Wow. So I think that's great. And I knew where Ron was coming from. And that's why I asked that question, because it just seems like a natural that there's got to be another group that you pass it on and say, you've gone through our course. Now it's time for you to move to the next level.
Absolutely,
is that right, Ron?
Yeah, I was actually smiling about with Bob's question about profitability. What are you talking about? So basically, what the first like 1 to 3 years in a biotechnology company is taking an idea to some preclinical proof of concept. And that typically takes some millions of dollars, think, you know, single digit millions. And then the next stage is taking a late preclinical asset and bringing it through IND enabling studies and phase one, the very first in man studies. And then at the other end of that, you have clinical proof of concept. To go across that valley of death is about $10 to $15 million per asset. And then at that point, if you've got that asset plus additional shots on goal behind you, you can consider going to the public markets. So an investor would have an exit at that point. So what you're talking about, if you're investing very, very early, typically a half a dozen to 8 years out before you can have your preferred shares convert to common shares that you can trade and have it be liquid. So that's kind of, you know, so the major challenges in the whole investment cycle is the very front end, even just getting off the ground, which is where Hubert is and very important. A lot of opportunity, a lot of assets, but they're withering on the vine. And then the hardest one, where you need high sophistication and reasonable capital and infrastructure, is that valley of death. Once you're in clinical proof of concept, people line up around the block to fund you. Your access to capital, your access to large pharma, your access to funds and capabilities is very, very different. But at the beginning, relatively easy to get started, but then once you get it on second base and you're in scoring position, that part is very hard in life sciences.
Agreed. I had a chance to look at the chat there, and I don't know who, I think Patrick asked the question, but anyway, I'm not related to Russ.
Okay.
I have no, I came here by myself to the United States, so I have no
relatives.
Relation. Okay, we'll let him know. Okay. So,
Linda, you have time for another question or?
Yes. Now, here is an entrepreneur, and go ahead. He's got a very interesting.
I apologize. I don't want to take time. You know, I just thought it was fascinating between the discussion between Ron and Hubert, and Ron, I think there's a book called Crossing the Chasm. You call it the Valley of Death, but you have to cross the chasm in order to get to the other side. And I think that's where I am. And also about Texas. You know, I live in New York. I run a company called Oxygenium, and we create oxygen. We found a way to create oxygen. It's the first oxygen generator that is continuous use, high flow, 0 to 15 liters per minute, that will replace the size D or size E compressed tank. It's small, and you know, we're looking in the future to make the people who are suffering from acute respiratory, chronic respiratory disease, such as pulmonary fibrosis, to make them more mobile. And so grandpa can go to the movies with the grandchildren, but that's what we do now. But you know, like my question about Texas is, I would go wherever I can find, I have a talent gap. And, you know, it's like, I would go wherever I find talent. I need like the engineer and the chemical engineer and the mechanical engineers and the design, the product design. And, you know, the nice thing about our oxygen is that we generators that has a cartridge. And when you finish, you know, one cart with a cartridge that we have now, a 3-liter cartridge, we can produce 600 liters of oxygen. And when you finish, you just pull it out, you still have 2 minutes, and you plug the second one, and you have continuous use oxygen, continuous flow. And it became very acute need now with the post-COVID and during COVID, people are attached to oxygen all the time. So at the beginning, people told us nobody needs you because ventilators, but now it's on. But you know, at first I was very happy that you said you can put a pin in New York, but then I said to myself, why not Texas? You know, the weather is better there, and everybody's exiting New York now. you know, it's very, I just want to say, you know, it's very fascinating, and I wish I knew about you before, and the organization that you're running.
I will help put together private meetings. I invited Oda to come. I knew he would get a lot out of this, and especially when I knew both of you were going to be on this call, I said, Oda needs to hear this. There's such a demand for what he's got to get people out of the hospital and at home. And when you've got a, you know, you can get oxygen and a woman can put it in her own purse. And that's just amazing to me. So it's, yeah. Hopefully you all think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So anyhow, is there, off this, what I'll try to do is set something up, Oded, with the two of them, and you can talk privately.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other questions? It's just about time to call this quits. We will, you can get hold of us if I know how to get both of these people. Of course, Dr. DePeño will be our next speaker. He's going to be talking about something entirely different, but this is what he's all about. And so he will be letting us know what's going on in the solution to cure COVID. So if there are no other questions, then we'll say thank you very much. David Smith wants to know about the wine.
that's the website. I mean, I'm not a big wine drinker, but I love Merlots, but then my brain falls out. And so and the price is like those tea bag things you were talking about. It's like $2 glass. So I'm definitely going to try it.
Yeah. I will too. Millions of dollars.
I get a headache if I drink more than 2 glasses of wine. So thank you all so much. Hopefully you enjoyed this, and we wish you a very, very, very happy Thanksgiving. Just be safe and be careful, but eat a lot of food.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. We'll see you in 2 weeks.